Lead and other heavy metals, those were a snap. I will say this, just as a small point, vitamin C actually promotes lead excretion. With mercury, and this is why glutathione is so important in the treatment of acute mercury exposures as in dental work, vitamin C does not promote the excretion of mercury. It promotes the neutralization of the toxicity. If you're exposed to mercury, it'll still accumulate in your tissues, but the vitamin C will acutely neutralize the toxicity. So always try to look at things chemically and pharmacologically and protect against the effects while promoting the excretion. Pesticides, one of his most dramatic cases. In North Carolina, I'm from Mississippi, and I spent probably another 15 years in Louisiana, so I got a little of the South in my system. And down there we have what you call industrial strength insects. And unless you take a baseball bat to them or an insecticide that'll kill you as well as the insect, you're in bad shape. And for those of you who don't know, cockroaches fly. Well, they had three little boys playing in the field in North Carolina, and what happens? A big old crop duster comes along. And if you've ever seen crop dusters work, they're about not much higher than this off the ground. You know, seven to 10 feet off the ground. They came right over these little kids. There was like a 10 and 11-year-old and a younger like 6-year-old. Well, the 10 and 11-year-old, I guess, intuitively realized that all that pesticide was not going to be good for them. So they immediately jumped on top of the little kid and then got the major dose on top of them. Well, again, you're probably going to see what's happening here. They got sick pretty quick, and they got three different admitting physicians. Klenner and two other physicians. Well, you can probably guess what Dr. Klenner did. I hope at this point in time you could predict what Dr. Klenner did. That boy was home 24 hours later. The little boy that was covered, he just got observed for 24 hours. He went home too because he didn't have that much contact. And the other boy got, as we would say back at Charity Hospital in New Orleans, they fed him and fanned him for a week. Gave him IV fluids, let him eat his last few meals until he was dead 7 days later. Okay. First, I'm going to start with a little more traditional applications of vitamin C before I start talking about the radical. The good, the bad, and the radical. The two most important things on vitamin C are dose and rate. Well, make it three, and route. Because if you get a high enough dose in the blood often enough, you're just about assured of getting enough tissue penetration anywhere, with some exceptions, and I'll talk about those. Frequency and duration are also important. Dr. Klenner described a situation in which his two little girls, I think they were, somewhere between 6 and 12 at the time, and they got the measles. And it was never very clear in Dr. Klenner's article whether he really intended to experiment on his little girls or whether he just didn't want to be the bad guy to give them a needle. Because he'd give them a bunch of oral vitamin C, they'd feel better, their rash would start to disappear after a day or two, and then he'd stop the vitamin C, rash came back, gave more oral vitamin C, rash went away. He did this two or three times, and then again, he didn't indicate his intent, but he sort of got frustrated and then gave them both injections of vitamin C, and the measles were cured and gone. So whenever you're treating any illness with vitamin C, I don't want to minimize it. Always use oral as well. Never give up the opportunity to give oral vitamin C in addition to any other application of vitamin C and other nutrients you're given. So always have a baseline of oral. Don't just do an IV and miss the opportunity for them to take 10, 20, 30, 40 grams of vitamin C orally as well, depending on their bowel tolerance. Type is very important. I always have to figure out how to do this without doing a major aside here. Ascorbic acid or sodium ascorbate are your best two. You have mineral ascorbates, which are perfectly fine, but the doses of vitamin C that you're eventually going to want to take, you might be taking more of the associated mineral than you would otherwise. So your most innocuous and probably most effective form is sodium, which you have a ton of in your body, and the ascorbate ion. And it's salty, and it's pH neutral, pH 7 to 7.4. That's the way to go. Calcium ascorbate, I would avoid, in general, on a chronic basis. On an acute basis, calcium ascorbate is good because calcium, as Dr. Weston Price observed some 60 years ago, increasing your ionized calcium acutely in the setting of an infection is extremely effective in promoting resolution of the infection. But for long-term chronic maintenance of vitamin C, you're not treating an infection, you need to minimize your calcium intake. One of my next books, if I ever get around to writing it, I've accumulated all the information, is going to be entitled Death by Calcium, How Calcium Supplements Frequently Kill. We are in a calcium fanaticism in this country. We are in a brain-dead use of, you can't possibly take too much calcium at any cost. What happens when you dissolve something into a liquid and you keep on dissolving it, add something else, keep on dissolving it, it precipitates out. The same type of calcium that precipitates in caves precipitates inside your blood vessels. Okay? If you take it in and you absorb it, that's where it's going to go. So mostly the ladies are at risk here because they're the really big calcium takers. But I'm going to tell you right now that, and again, I hate to tantalize you and move along, but I have to say this, and that is you're trading a minimal risk of osteoporosis and osteoporotic fracture for a massive risk of heart attack and cancer. How do they find a cancer on your mammogram? Calcifications. One and the same. Okay. A few quickies about the safety of vitamin C. This is where the propaganda mill really hits hard. I'm going to try not to go off on too much of a tangent as to how the pharmaceutical industries seem to have the liberal press in their pocket. I mean, whenever they think things are dying down, then they come out with a brand new article that said the same thing 3 years ago about, oh, you're going to get kidney stones, oh, you're going to clog up your carotid arteries, you're going to do this, you're going to do that with vitamin C. Unparalleled track record of safety. Now remember at the start of this I said that I think the scientific evidence shows that the two most important molecules in the body are water and ascorbate. Well, I got news for you too. Not only do I believe that's true, I can also tell you for sure that water is much more toxic than ascorbate is. At Charity Hospital on the third floor, which was our psychiatric ward, every now and then you'd get some poor, deranged individual that felt compelled to drink water nonstop. These patients would drink so much water, they would get severely hyponatremic, have seizures, and die. Now, that's taking water orally. Water orally. Oral water kills. Oral vitamin C does not. You may poop your brains to death, but you're not going to die. Now, all these articles we start seeing in the press and everything. Actually, when I looked at this, I said, wow, this is interesting. Do you know that there's this very little-known educational institution in the Northeast? I think it's Cambridge, Massachusetts. And if my memory serves me correct, I think it's Harvard. Harvard put out two massive studies, 60, 70, 80,000 people in the studies. Hello, vitamin C reduces kidney stone incidence. And if you already have an existing stone, it helps resolve it. Now, if you already have advanced chronic kidney disease, renal insufficiency, that's a different scenario. But everything's more toxic in those patients because everything's more concentrated. But in the normal person, it's as close to zero toxicity as you can get. I mean, when actually you're reducing the incidence, that's sort of like less than zero toxicity. Okay. And that's where I do right here. The only articles in the literature that discuss kidney stones, causing kidney stones, are these, like about 8 or 9 or 10 incredibly poorly written case reports. I mean, they're more poorly written than I'm presenting this orally. Okay. And these patients have been incredibly sick for months or years. They're on a dozen different things other than the vitamin C, and then lo and behold, things get saturated, calcium oxalate crystals start forming, and they get kidney stones. Aha, vitamin C is to blame. Now, this was an interesting thing, too, because when I was just working with vitamin C and trying to counsel patients with just common sense, whatever the heck that is, I said, well, now, what happens in an organ transplant? Well, in an organ transplant, you don't want the immune system to reject the organ. So it stands to reason that you're taking these immunosuppressive drugs, steroids, Imuran, etc., because you want to suppress the immune system so the immune system doesn't reject the organ. And what does vitamin C do? Vitamin C stimulates the immune system. God, well, I guess that, what do I tell patients? I mean, I don't want them to reject their kidneys. I don't want them to reject their heart. Well, lo and behold, they've actually done some animal experiments here. And I'll let your conscience be your guide. I'm trying to remember the animal. I think it was in rabbits, where they did heart transplants on the rabbits. And then they observed the rejection process. And do you know what was observed in the rejection process 100% of the time? Increased oxidative stress. Well, they gave a lot of these rabbits vitamin C, and they kept their hearts. So in this animal model, vitamin C was also the best thing to prevent organ rejection. So the whole paradigm of the immune system and how it rejects an organ, I think, is an incredibly complex, and we really still don't have a good grip on it. But I would probably still avoid super megadose vitamin C, and on an organ transplant patient, I'd probably give them somewhere between 3 and 9 grams a day as just chronic maintenance. Rebound, this is an interesting thing. It's gotten overplayed, but there's an important scenario that you need to remember and be aware of. It's clearly shown in the literature that if you take a large amount of vitamin C for a long period of time, let's just say you're taking 10 grams a day and you've taken it for 10 years, and you're doing fine, okay, and you're part of a laboratory experiment, and you stop. You stop, Your liver enzymes have been stimulated so that they're metabolizing the C more quickly. So you stop supplementing, and then the C levels dip below what is considered normal for a couple days, and then gradually come back up to the normal level. So you are, for 2 or 3 days, below normal levels due to this rebound effect. Well, what do you think is going to happen when you've been taking 10 grams of vitamin C a day, you live by yourself, you've got no friends, you've got no family, nobody knows you exist, nobody knows how much vitamin C you take, and then a car runs over you, and you're in the hospital, you're on the operating table, they're taking out your spleen, they're repairing your lacerated liver, an endotracheal tube gets rammed down your throat, and you're in an intensive care unit for 3 or 4 or 5 days, what do you think your chances of survival are? Not too damn good. Your vitamin C levels are about down to zero. So, far be it from me as a lawyer to advise anybody to do anything illegal or illicit. But let's just say, if your friend or family member, if you don't find some way to get vitamin C to them in the intensive care unit, be prepared for the worst possible outcome. And we actually had, without using any names, probably wouldn't know the names anyway, we actually had a case like this about 6 months ago. A friend of mine called me and said, Tom, Dr. So-and-so is in the hospital, had bad gallbladder disease, infected gallbladder, got operated on. They said, he's in the intensive care unit, he's dying, they've given him blast rites 2 or 3 times. I said, well, that sounds pretty bad. And he said, what should I do? And I said, do you need to risk your big old ass and get in there, and when the nurse isn't looking, give IV push vitamin C? Well, he found somebody else's ass to do it. But it got done, and the guy was discharged 3 days later. We bury so many patients that don't need to be buried. Oh, this is sort of outdated, but this is sort of a micro dose here, 35 to 50 grams. I'll talk about doses in a moment. I guess I just didn't get around to revising these slides, you know. really, though, especially for what I'm... Let me see how many slides here. Okay. For the purposes of IV infusion, the ascorbic acid's buffered with sodium bicarb to what it says on the bottle, pH 5.5 to 7, that's fine. You'll do great. Good stuff, fine. It's going to be different for another application I'm going to talk about in a moment. It's usually good to keep it as simple as possible. The 50 grams, which is 100 cc's, remove 100 cc's of sterile water, put it in there, and you got a good infusion. Now, you can add other things, but don't go blaming the vitamin C for the doggone IV hurting if you've added a dozen other things to the IV. When I just give these IVs like this, nobody complains of discomfort. And then people say, oh, I'm giving this vitamin C and it hurts so bad. And, well, what else are you using, you know? And they end up with very hypertonic solutions. I mean, I'm not against magnesium. I'm not against most of the B vitamins or any of these things. Those are fine things to add, but you might have to slow down the rate of infusion. If you have an IV like this, you can run it in as fast as it'll go. And unless you're a tiny woman with a hand vein, if you're a larger vein, it's going to be fine. For infusion purposes, 1 to 4 hours is fine. Orally, this is generally a good range if you're relatively non-toxic. What does that mean? Well, that means if If the dentist hasn't assaulted you lately, 6 to 12,000 milligrams will be fine. If you've got a couple root canals and 4 wisdom teeth cavitations, you know, you might need 20, 25, 30, 35 grams a day, which you're not going to take because of the bowel tolerance, and you're going to be chronically low on your vitamin C and antioxidant levels until you get the dental toxicity addressed. You minimize it by giving into divided doses. You can take a lot more vitamin C on a daily basis, and I neither recommend for this or against this. Some people do great with it, where they'll just dissolve a huge amount of vitamin C in a drink and they'll just sip the drink all day long. And at the end of the day, they'll have that amount in. You'll definitely minimize any bowel effects the more gradual you take it versus if you take a big dose once or twice a day. Ascorbic acid is great, but it's going to irritate the stomach. So for the oral, you really want to go with a sodium ascorbate. Now, let's see. Okay. For the IV purposes, sodium ascorbate's best too. Why? Because it always comes in at perfect pH. pH 7 to 7.4. You know, unless you have an electronic pH meter and an incredible amount of patients, it's hard to start out with ascorbic acid at pH of 1 and put enough sodium bicarbonate in there to get it to 5 or 6 or 7. And then, if you're the slightest bit colorblind, which I am, you look at that little orange 4, 5, 6, and 7. Oh, it looks like it's 7. Might be 4. And boy, will your patient let you know. Now, Dr. Cathcart has a very nice protocol for mixing up your own sodium ascorbate stock solution from sodium ascorbate powder. And I highly recommend doing that. If you're going to jump into significant C therapy, not only are you going to have a superior product that's going to work much better, have much better patient compliance, but the amount of money you're going to save is phenomenal. By getting powder, we get powder in 25 kilogram amounts, you know, about 55 pounds. That costs us about $250. If you did that and just bought the vials, you'd spend closer to $1,500. So a lot of the applications I'm going to talk about, conversely, can be prohibitively expensive for you, and the patient's not going to want to pay for it if they're going to come in and get the amounts that I'm recommending and have to write a check for $500 every day rather than a check for $150. So it all works together that way. Now, incidentally, Dr. Cathcart's protocol you can get on orthomed.com. orthomed.com. We've put one modification into it that I strongly recommend. Well, two modifications. One is he puts a little bit of EDTA in there to bind up the ferric and the copper ions so that the solution doesn't auto-oxidize and get yellow too quick. If you're going to use it within the next 2 to 3 days, or even within the next week, that's not necessary. I think he probably uses much smaller amounts than we do. So if you're going to use it within a week, you don't need the EDTA, number one. Number two is they make a two-ended pass-through 0.22 micron filter. So once you've mixed it up, and you can mix it up in as unsterile a fashion as you want, and then you hang it up there, stick an IV in there, stick the end of the IV into this 0.22 micron filter, put a needle on the other end of it and stick it into a vacuum bottle, and then you got beautiful, pure solution. Probably wouldn't be any problem even if you didn't filter it. I don't think of anything on the planet that's going to grow in a sodium ascorbate solution. But, you know, let's be nice. Okay. All right. The future. As exciting as the past has been, And as exciting as the present is, the future, I think, is mind-boggling. I'll give you a little bit of background. I had finished doing all this research with Dr. Klenner's stuff, and it kept on coming back to me that, well, granted, they were significantly seriously ill patients, but he still gave them IV push vitamin C. He still gave this one patient 48 grams of vitamin C in a couple minutes. Everybody that I've seen is just hanging up 50 grams of vitamin C, and it's going in at a one-hour rate. Oh, my God, slow that down. Slow that down. What are you going to do? Well, what you're going to do is you're going to get the vitamin C levels much higher, much quicker. I try not to inflict things on other people until I have a little bit of an idea of what's going on. So I was sitting in my office one day and said, I really don't feel like doing an IV, but I think I could use some vitamin C. So I just drew up about 20 cc's of the 500 cc straight out the little vials, so it was like 10 grams of vitamin C. And even though I've only done legal drugs in my life, I was extremely effective at sticking myself with this butterfly needle and putting a little piece of tape on it and, you know, and then pulling the tourniquet off with my mouth. And then I just started pushing it. I said, just waiting for the sensations. And after about 10 minutes, it was in, and that was fine. I said, okay, not bad. Well, a couple weeks later, I still talk with Dr. Huggins every now and then. And periodically, I would go, Hal would be feeling down, and I'd go hook up an IV vitamin C on him and pick him up, this sort of thing. And he called me, and he said, God, Tom, I really need an IV vitamin C, but I don't have any time. I said, aha, have I got the thing for you? And Hal is what I call the original canary in the coal mine. If there's a side effect to be imagined, he's going to have it. I mean, you can't do anything to him and not have him scream bloody murder. So I said, well, I'll let him scream. Let's see what happens. And I went over there and did it and gave the push. And his eyes started perking up and said, oh, my God, what's going on here? And then, like, a couple days later, he said, I felt better for 3 or 4 days after that 10-gram IV push than when you infuse 50 grams. Okay, well, that's interesting. All right, and I'll put that in the processor, and we'll work on that. Well, so then things progressed a little further. I became affiliated with a clinic in Denver, and two of my comrades, one who has a degree in exercise physiology and the other one who's a chiropractor inventor extraordinaire, who were both heavy into fitness and weightlifting, and we'd do vitamin C, IVs, drips, and this, that, or the other, and glutathione for general health. And then I just made the mistake of just mentioning this IV push vitamin C to them. And, you know, I was sitting here, well, we should probably work the dose up. Well, next thing I know, those madmen had given each other 50 grams of vitamin C IV push to each other. I said, wow, you not only pushed the envelope, you ruptured the damn envelope. But the die was cast. And I tried it myself and had some incredible effects. And one of the things is, and again, it came back to what Huggins had told me, and that is, I can now tell you by my own conviction. Do I have the data to show you? No. I can tell you by my own conviction, smaller doses of vitamin C given rapidly have profoundly greater physiological effects than larger doses dripped in. I think You could drip in 1,000 grams a day, just at a steady state like that, and you're not going to have the effect that if you take that 1,000 grams and split it up into 50-gram boluses. It's that spike of vitamin C that does it. Just, and now this is pure anecdote, I'm going to tell you right here, but it's very interesting anecdote. I told you my friends, my colleagues are into bodybuilding and body training, and I usually go to the gym with them, and I've lifted weights a fair amount of my life, and I sort of have my little plateau levels. Well, this one day, I took 50 grams of vitamin C IV, and I took another few grams of glutathione IV about 3 or 4 hours before I worked out. Unbelievable. Now, I can't say this happens every time, so there's external factors in play that I haven't identified, but this particular day, virtually all my exercises, I lifted 100% more than I did usually. I was lifting so much weight, my two friends were concerned I was injuring myself. They said, stop, slow down. You know, you're doing too much. But vitamin C in these doses, I can only imagine, ratchets up lactate metabolism and excretion to a point that virtually all of your muscular metabolism is being devoted to exertion rather than to being devoted to physiological detoxification. Because there was no soreness the next few days either. So, I mean, there was no muscles being torn or anything like that. The muscle fibrils were legitimately stronger. Now, so we started evolving a little paradigm here. Pulsed intravenous vitamin C. Klenner did it, but Klenner did it for patients that were dying. What's this going to do for patients who are alive and fairly well? Well, lots of stuff. First of all, we know you get a higher acute blood levels. Just do the math. I mean, Reardon did some nice figures where he gave 60 grams of vitamin C over 90 minutes, and he showed the pharmacokinetics. Well, if you give 60 grams in 2 minutes, you're going to be getting a blood level acutely that's 45 times as high. Straightforward pharmacokinetics. What is that going to do? Well, one thing it does is it gets a tissue penetration that you're never going to get, never, at a low-grade infusion level, no matter how long you infuse it. Now, that clearly is one of the scenarios where they say you make expensive urine. You just infuse it. Just keep it going. You're going to have good effects. I mean, we've got a lot of great stuff that vitamin C has done by infusions, but we're just ready to take it another exponent. Well, now, here's the thing that has not been recognized. Yet, believe it or not, it's in the literature. It's in a couple articles in the 1950s with both humans and with animals. They showed, by measuring blood sugar levels, you give vitamin C, blood sugar drops. Okay? Well, what's amazing is how much it drops. With the insulin potentiation therapy, I was reading some of the stuff there. You're given the dose of insulin, and you're getting hypoglycemic levels of 50, 40, 35 within 25, 30 minutes. We get a blood sugar of 20 to 25 within 2 minutes. What happens is, for those of you who don't know it, vitamin C and glucose are very similar molecules. In the animals, you synthesize vitamin C from glucose with 4 small enzyme steps. So morphologically, stereochemically, these molecules look virtually identical to the body. And in fact, when it comes to vitamin C and glucose uptake in the cells, They're directly competitive. This is one reason why diabetics are so sick. They keep huge levels of glucose that always predominate and get into the cell instead of the vitamin C. When you get the vitamin C levels up, by sheer mass numbers, more vitamin C will go into the cell because it's direct competition for the two. Well, they've also shown in these studies that it increases insulin levels. And this fits perfectly. What happens when you give 25 to 50 grams of vitamin C IV push, you get an enormous, enormous endogenous release of insulin into the blood. This endogenous release of insulin into the blood immediately drops your blood sugar down to 25 to 30. Now, you're probably flipping through those pages in your mind saying 25 to 30. That's coma brain death time. That's exactly right. But it doesn't happen when the blood sugar is that low and the vitamin C level is that high. Your brain starts running on vitamin C rather than glucose. We've been able to take patients and keep them in what I call a protected hypoglycemia for hours. They'll stay at a glucose of 20, 25, 30 for hours. The release of insulin is so massive that if one of them gets a little symptomatic, and when they start to get to 20, 25, they're a little dizzy and they're a little bit off. I'm not saying they feel 100%. And they say, oh, well, I need a little relief from this. We'll give them 10 or 15 or 20 cc's of D50, and they'll feel great in a minute, and we'll repeat the blood sugar. Now it's a whopping 45. In the case of just insulin, when you give all that D50, you knock it back up to 100, 120, this, that, or the other. So the implication is the endogenous release of insulin is enormous. Now, I can't imagine, you know, research down the road may show us one way or another, but I can't imagine that this is anything less than a phenomenal extension of the same basic principles as insulin potentiation therapy is classically done, except for the fact that you can keep them there for hours. You can give them other IVs with a wide variety of nutrients. You can give them chemotherapy drugs in different doses. And you can keep those windows of cellular membrane absorption open wide for an extended period of time and not be forced by the patient's unease or dis-ease to have to terminate the treatment earlier. Never do it, though, without your D50 around. We actually had one patient. And actually, this was one of the things that sort of got us thinking about this, who had just had a regular, quote-unquote, infusion of 50 grams of vitamin C the day before. But this is a very sick ALS patient. So all the defense mechanisms are down, nutrition's down, everything's down. And he was staying at a hotel next to the clinic, and we had a home nurse that would they would call to report on. And the next morning, the wife says, calls the nurse, says, I can't wake him up. I can't wake him up. And she came over and shook him. And so he started an IV pushed D50. He came out of it just like that. So you'll get this hypoglycemia with vitamin C infusions as well. It's just that it's very rarely clinically significant. A lot of times you'll have patients saying, oh, I feel a little lightheaded, or I'm a little hungry, or this, that, or the other. That's hypoglycemia. And if you ever really have a patient who's at all uncomfortable during their vitamin C infusion, no matter what the symptom is, headache, we see that, altered vision, you name it, the blood pressure shoots up, hypertension, the first thing you do is give glucose, okay? Don't Don't give them an antihypertensive drug. Don't give them a pill for their headache. Okay, almost all the time, any type of symptom in that context of giving vitamin C is hypoglycemia. Then in all this context, I talked to several colleagues across the country, and almost simultaneously, about 2 or 3 days apart, I got separate phone calls from one colleague in Illinois that said, well, I've been given a lot of vitamin C and to this diabetic patient, and she's on the insulin pump, and now the blood sugar went from 150 to 450, and I was giving him the vitamin C infusion. I said, well, that really doesn't make any sense. I said, your technique is probably misinterpreting the vitamin C for glucose. And so that sort of left unresolved, and then sure enough, 2 days later, this other doc calls me, same type of scenario. I said, I gave this to him, and now their blood sugar is 450, but then he added, he said, but I sent one to the emergency room, and they drew a blood sugar, and it was 50. Okay, so there are different technologies out there for measuring glucose. You have to understand what technology you're measuring your glucose on, and it can be potentially catastrophic. I mean, what the case of the diabetic patient is going up to 450. What are they going to do? Give her more insulin? Not a good idea. Okay, so anything we do can be done to somebody's detriment if we don't understand all the different principles involved. Now, this is interesting, too, because furosemide and hydration, Lasix and hydration. Actually, we've never seen this with the IV push vitamin C, but we have seen this with high-dose infusions. And on 3 separate occasions, one with a hyperbaric and the other 2 without a hyperbaric, who were getting 50 to 100 grams of vitamin C intravenously, they developed acute flank pain over their kidneys. Well, I about had a cowl the first time this happened. Said, oh my God, acute renal failure. Oh my God, you know, oh my God, oh my God. I said, I don't need this crap, you know. And I said, okay, think physiologically. What's happening here? I said, well, okay, if it's acute renal failure or if things are concentrating, what do I have to do? Well, number one, I got to stop the damn IV, stop giving solute. So on 3 separate occasions now, so number one, if you get flank pain, stop your C or other solute infusion. You're given magnesium, you're given anything. You don't need to give anything else. It's concentrated. My theory is, and it's my theory, that the solute load gets so intense, perfusing the kidney, that it actually pulls free cell water out of the surrounding kidney cells, causing the pain reflex. Unaddressed, it will probably go on to kidney failure or kidney stones. But you address it promptly, very easily. Number 2 is hydration. You stop the C and you pour in normal saline. Number 3, they start drinking water like crazy. But number 4, very, very important, intravenous Lasix. Now, for those of you who have done internships and residencies in medicine, this, that, or the other, a good dose of intravenous Lasix will dilute your urine in minutes. What it does is it poisons the enzymes in the loop of Henle, and you stop pulling water out, and you start causing a massive flow of fluid through the kidneys. And this takes care of it every time. 40, if you have normal kidney function. If you're dealing with someone with renal insufficiency, you might have to go to 80, 160. But normal kidney function, 40 grams intravenously while forcing fluid will get you out of it. Another thing, too, is you run into these patients who don't like to drink water. Say, you don't drink this water, I'm going to take your IV out. You're not going to force me to treat you in a fashion that you shouldn't be treated. If you don't keep yourself orally hydrated, if you don't drink 2 quarts of water over the next 2 hours, go see somebody else and drink your coffee or fruit juice or whatever it is you want. But you got to drink water, and you got to drink a lot of it, and if you don't, I'm not going to treat you. And you shouldn't let anybody compromise you in how you approach these therapies. So, let's see. It's not a very grandiose ending. Yeah, okay, let's go to question and answers. Thank you.
I imagine there's a few questions. Who wants to start?
So are you seeing an improvement in diabetics with their insulin requirements, especially the toughies on the pump that are doing the high-dosage insulin exogenously ramped up? I forget the name of the protocol, but got some pretty funky diabetics. Is this going to improve their situation a lot, do you think, these pushes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me give you a little bit of the symptomatology, okay? When you give 25 grams, which is 50 cc's, of vitamin C. Oh, no, here, you absolutely have to use sodium ascorbate dissolved for this. I mean, if you just used the stuff that's in the vials, it's going to hurt. They're going to drive them nuts. You need to go to the effort of getting sodium ascorbate dissolved for your stock solution, or the injections will be too painful, number one. Number two, everybody, if you give it fast, if you give this 25 grams in 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, they get a huge flushing effect. I mean, just feels like your head's on fire, going down. And within 15 to 20 seconds of the start of it, you get a massive thirst. So you have huge amounts of water sitting by, and I guarantee you they'll drink a quart of water in a minute, okay? A few people will have a self-limited headache for a few minutes, and most people, not surprisingly, with the hypoglycemic, will stay lightheaded and a bit out of it for 15 or 20 minutes. I wouldn't ever do it to anybody who, for some reason, has skipped lunch, skipped breakfast, come in on an empty stomach, or you will knock them out. And always, 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 is that enough alwayses? Always, always, always have some D50 around. D50 will pull you out of any situation you're in, just like with regular insulin potentiation therapy, in seconds. So anybody who's uncomfortable with their symptomatology, you can give them 10 or 15 cc's of D50, and they're fine just like that. And what's nice about that is, as I mentioned before, the endogenous insulin release is so large, 10 or 15 cc's of D50 doesn't wreck the whole scenario. It just brings you from your blood sugar of 20 up to 35 or 40. The patient feels fine, and you still have the ongoing hypoglycemia and overall excess insulin presence for hours on. So you don't wreck the whole situation, if you will, by giving a little bit of D50. And you can emphasize this to your patients. Look, you'll probably be able to tolerate it, but if it's too much, let me know, and we can ease you back a little bit. Okay.
I had a question about those folks with high tissue concentrations of vitamin C. I've heard of stories where folks go in the dentist, they need 3 to 4 times the amount of anesthesia due to high tissue concentrations of vitamin C. If that's true, might one need to use more higher concentrations of the chemotherapeutic agent if they were trying to replace that with just...
You know, that's a matter of timing, okay? Chemotherapy agents per se are almost all toxic. They're almost all pro-oxidant with a desired side effect of the fact that they're killing cells you're wanting to kill, okay? And I certainly wouldn't give, if I wanted my chemotherapy to work optimally, I wouldn't give it while I'm giving an IV of vitamin C. But the vitamin C is an immune system enabler, so you stagger the dosages, you know. Give one in the morning, one in the afternoon. Then you have an optimization. Then you have the vitamin C predominating, getting into the tissues, and then a few hours later, come along your chemotherapy. Then you have your chemotherapy working in a vitamin C optimized immune system, but the vitamin C is not in the bloodstream to neutralize the chemo.
Is there any possibility at all that you're mistaken on that low blood sugar? Could there be something happening with the ascorbate that makes the T tests look like the blood sugar is low, but in fact, it's not that low.
We've also drawn blood specimens. It's low.
Yeah, but I mean the test that's being used for the blood specimens.
No, I mean we documented the series with finger stick, but then we've also taken blood specimen and sent them off to the lab.
And it's low on that specimen. Yeah, but what are they doing in the lab? That technique that they're using in the lab, could that possibly be confounded by the vitamin C?
Well, the only way it could be confounded would be to jack it up, not down. Yeah, so no, I don't think so.
Okay.
And combined with the fact that like, we have those old articles in the literature where they did show this some time back, but it was just largely ignored. But then this bell started going off when I saw this happening, and I went back and looked at these articles, and they fit perfectly with the hyperinsulinemia, hypoglycemia. But we had never seen clinically before the fact that if at the same time you have hyperinsulinemia and hypoglycemia, you also have hyperascorbutemia, that you have cerebral protection. Yes, sir.
Any comment on beet-derived vitamin C?
Oh, I think it's a more expensive form of vitamin C. Really, the only, I think ascorbate is ascorbate is ascorbate. Use the regular corn, and I really think the only reason to pay the extra money for the beet is if you have an extremely rare person that has a corn allergy.
I have a few questions. Okay. Just a comment, actually. There is a study showing that vitamin C substantially increases secretion of mercury through the stools, 25-fold, and Dr. Data presented it. That's why I actually use vitamin C. I think it does get rid of mercury. But
that's a very good point.
We may not see it in the urine, so we think it's not getting rid of it, but it is, but through the stools. And if someone has, for example, a urinary cancer or urinary disease or prostate cancer, I will chelate them with the vitamin C. If they have a digestive problem, I will chelate them with more DMPS. So, you know, you can choose your chelator based on the physiology.
A lot of these initial studies were done with much lower doses of C, and we were suspecting, but haven't documented, that if you start getting above the 50 gram a day or so infusion level of vitamin C, that you do, in fact, have that effect. So, And I was talking with Dr. Data some time back, and we didn't have the results yet, but yes, that was our suspicion. So
right, yeah.
If you use a high enough dose of C, you will get a pro. But in early animal studies, they absolutely showed an accumulation in the body, but probably like so many other vitamin C studies, they were using far too low a dose to have the effect that you're mentioning there.
It was 50 grams. Two comments that were brought in the last ACA meeting. One was the idea of giving a lipoic acid push.
I'm sorry, what?
Two comments right. Brought, and I wanted to hear your opinion at the last ACA meeting in May. One was giving a lipoic acid push at the end of the vitamin C to recycle vitamin C and keep, they claim they kept the higher levels of vitamin C for a longer period of time. The other thing.
That was Reardon?
No, actually, it was Dr. Parsadu, was mentioning this. And the other comment was actually had a strong feeling about giving vitamin C literally together with chemotherapy, which...
There are certain forms of chemotherapy where together there's a synergistic effect, but there's also other forms of chemotherapy when they're given together, vitamin C will directly attack it as a toxin and neutralize its effect. So that's variable depending on the chemotherapy agent.
And you mentioned high dosages, but you said you will go into the detail. When you say you give high dosages in a push or in a vitamin C drip, what do you mean when you talk about high dosages on a daily basis or a push basis?
Okay, well, high doses is certainly anything above 50 grams. I got to say, it's interesting, too. We had a case of West Nile virus that we cured with 150-gram infusion. Actually, he also had a hyperbaric, so I don't know how much the oxygen synergized with that, but... he was feeling sick. He had high liver enzymes, fever. And we were in Colorado, but we weren't messing with, we know vitamin C does so well, but he on his own had gotten a West Nile test. And after his fever broke that night and he felt fine, the West Nile test later on came back positive. I just talked myself away from whatever your question was. Oh, I don't know about the lipoic acid. The lipoic acid is good stuff. Reardon has shown that there does appear to be a synergism between the two. And I think that's what we're going to find. I think because of the concerns of bioavailability, where one unique molecular structure gets into a certain tissue or niche that another doesn't, combining different antioxidants and different mechanisms, we're going to start seeing synergism. But so far, there just hadn't been a lot of research done in that area. But I applaud what Dr. Reardon has done. I don't know the fellow that gave this particular talk, but I know Reardon has already shown that the alpha lipoic and the vitamin C are synergistic. Okay. Yes, sir.
Hi. That was very interesting and very creative. In my talk I gave yesterday, I extolled the virtues of creativity in medicine. I want to congratulate
even
you.
Loco. But thank you for saying creative instead.
Yeah, sounds better. I got a bunch of questions, but you say that you infuse the high dose vitamin C, and then within 2 minutes you're getting a very, very significant drop in the blood glucose level.
Right. I mean, the blood finger sticks are very consistent
right.
in showing a rate of progression down and a rate of gradually coming up. So we're able, to immediately after the 2 minutes is done and they're already feeling flushed and having all these symptoms to get a specimen just like that. So we're able to pretty well document by that mechanism that
I understand that
that's how quickly the glucose drops.
And that is because you...
Now, we haven't measured insulin levels ourselves.
Well, that was what I was going to say.
But in these two articles where they first described vitamin C with hypoglycemia, they also described hyperinsulinemia. And I mean, we're a small outfit. I don't have thousands of dollars to go into my pocket and pay these laboratories for tests to satisfy my curiosity if somebody already did it in 1960.
Right.
It's exciting stuff, and I'd love to see somebody pick up the ball and run with it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not attacking. I'm simply.
Oh no, no, to, I, I, yeah. no, I'm not. I'm not saying that.
I'm trying to find out what's actually going on because
I'm not, I would have liked to have gotten all these levels, but it would have been out of Hip National, and I wasn't going to do that.
Yeah. When we administer bolus injections of insulin.
Okay.
We don't get anything like any reaction at all for at least 20 minutes across the board in all the patients that we're seeing. And back in ancient history, when Dr. Perez used to do this, he used upwards of 80 to 100 units on himself, and the timing still was around 25, 30 minutes. So I just think it's interesting, and really is interesting what you're talking about. But
this is speculation on my part, but what I think is happening is I think the actual total quantity of insulin being released by the pancreas is incredibly large. I think it's probably several hundred units, okay? And I think that's why it has that level of a quick effect, because it also drops the blood sugar lower than we see with the 30 or 40 units too. I mean, we've dropped some people down to 20, 19.
Right.
And they all have the same symptomatology, and it all gets a little worse the lower they get, and it all lessens if we give them a 10 or 15 cc's of D50 and bring them up to 35 or 40. So I think what's happening is you're just getting, I mean, I can't give you the biochemistry, but I think you're getting a tremendous amount of vitamin C pouring directly into the brain cells and running them instead of glucose. And so the rest of the body can get the benefits of this great open of the portals in the cells with the hypoglycemia, but not have to worry about frying brain cells. Contrary-wise, I mean, usually an hour or two after these pushes, well, like I told you, my little weightlifting experience, but other people, they just have phenomenal energy. We also had two professional athletes. One is a professional athlete trainer, and another one's a National Hockey League player, an all-star. And they had a series of these IV pushes and said, just go out and do your usual workout. And they reported, you know, 20 to 30% beyond their maximal performance usual. So they had, and these people, they work out a lot, so they have a really good idea of, you know, what they can do and what their tolerances are. So
I understand. The point is well taken. I just suggest that you do some acute insulin levels at the time.
Well, that's why I'm making these talks. I don't really have the time or money to do it, and I hope I light somebody else's interest.
How high do the insulin levels get?
I don't know. We haven't measured them.
Your talk reminds me of a patient we had who was going through chemotherapy, and then he came to the office. We gave him vitamin C drip every week when he had his chemo, and the doctors were amazed because his white blood cell count never bottomed out and he never lost his hair, so they thought he was some kind of Superman. My question had to do with tetany. Have you seen a tetany-type reaction with vitamin C when it's not buffered? And if so...
No, I know Klenner has described that, but we've never seen it in spite of the fact that we're using vastly more vitamin C now than Klenner ever did. I will say this. We've had similar results on a number of different infectious diseases as Klenner has had. For example, herpes, shingles, this sort of thing. But we've had to use almost three times the dose of vitamin C that Klenner did. And this puzzled me for some time until I considered the fact that Klenner was doing all this work in the 40s or 50s, and we're doing this work in 2003, and I think the average person has 10 to 20-fold more toxins now in their body than 50 years ago, and the same doses of vitamin C that worked for Klenner are not going to work for us because the toxins and the vitamin C are neutralized molecule to molecule.
Yeah, we see that in hepatitis patients. They have multiple viruses, and one of the treatments you may know for hepatitis is high doses of vitamin C. Are you treating any hepatitis patients in this way?
Yeah, we treated several hepatitis C patients. We got their liver enzyme levels to five-year lows, got them feeling energetically better than they had in years. I can't say we completely were able to eradicate the virus, but as I mentioned early on about acute versus chronic, I think most of these hepatitis C patients, if you give them either a series of pushes over the course of several weeks to a month, and that's the other thing too, is it's so perfect in terms of expense, time, economy. You know, somebody comes in and you give them 50 grams IV push and you watch them for 5 minutes and they're out the door. Okay, and you're not tying up. And I think you're doing far more good for them than sitting them down for 2 or 3 hours and giving them 100 or 150 gram infusion. But yes, I think most of the hepatitis C patients, if you give them a series of IVs like that, as close to daily as possible, you know, might not be able to do it on the weekend, but it's as close to daily as possible for a month or so, and then maintain them on extremely bowel tolerance, high oral doses, I think virtually all of them will get to the point where they can coexist with their virus and live to die from something else.
One last question. What would be the minimal ratio between ascorbic acid and sodium bicarbonate that you would use? In order to
For the IV push, I wouldn't do the IV push unless it was just sodium ascorbate dissolved. Just had too much difficulty with pain unless the pH is clearly 7 to 7.4. And when you start looking at those pH strips, you can't tell between 5 and 7 unless you got a heck of a lot better eyes than I do. What I will say this, a few important concepts about IVs in general. You'll have the same patient on consecutive days have a completely asymptomatic infusion or push or a highly painful one. Two things. Number one is if you have a butterfly or an IV and it starts to hurt a lot, just stop. Pull it out and restart it because sometimes the IV is coming and it's abutted against the vein wall and there's nothing, you're going to get perfect blood return, but it's abutted against the vein wall. You got to work it until you have a nice coaxial placement of the needle or the IV intracath. Number two is talk to the patient before they get the injection and tell them there's going to be some minor discomfort. If you have any severe burning, tell me immediately. 1 cc of vitamin C subcutaneously is like adriamycin. I mean, intense arm pain for 2 hours. You want to chop your arm off. Okay, so it's I don't know why it hurts that bad, but it does. So unless you're getting perfect blood return, don't even start. And if you start and there's significant pain, stop immediately and get another vein. Because for the most part, it shouldn't hurt at all if you have a fairly large caliber vein and you're infusing it reasonably briskly.
I'm going to have to call the questions to a halt right now so we can take a break for the exhibitors. But I do want to definitely thank Dr. Levy. And, of course, you can talk to Dr. Levy right now.